Hello and welcome to PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Ian Harditz, and today, happy holidays, everyone. We're recording this on 420. You are probably listening to this on 421, but we got more news and more goodness to catch up on. NFL draft just a week away. You know, I really consider May the true beginning of the fantasy football offseason. I know we go year round, but the rosters are finally going to be set up, cemented for the most part, and we can really start to grind our teeth into what's going on in August, September, and beyond. So, usual Wednesday guest is on hand, Mr. Andrew Erickson. You can always find at PFF on Twitter at Andrew Erickson _. Andrew, happy 420, and what's up, man?
Dude, I'm just so excited for the NFL draft. It's coming up, and then we can finally start to put the final pieces together of the puzzle, figure out where these rookies are going to land, spend, you know, countless hours writing and talking about the landing spots, how they fit. So I'm looking forward to it.
That makes two of us, Andrew. Exciting show on hand again, per usual with these Wednesday episodes. Going to quickly go through some news. Then we have some good segments later on. I want to look at veteran wide receiver influence if a rookie gets picked. Andrew and I did a similar segment looking at the running backs, I believe, last week. And also, we're going to look at exceptions to the idea that early round players dominate your fantasy drafts. If you want, go to pff.com. I should have my draft capital article up on Wednesday. But yeah, people, over 80% of high performing quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers, tight ends over the past 10 years have been drafted in those first three rounds. There are exceptions, and we need to try to figure out who those might be now before they find a landing spot. So without further ado, let's hit some news first. Andrew, big news from Monday was Mr. Alex Smith retiring. You know, when he came out in that Rams game and then he continued to play, he was awful. I remember just chewing him out on like a Sunday night podcast and even asking some of my friends that I know listened to it. I was like, did I come off too harsh on this guy who has an incredible comeback story and I was just saying was awful at football? Because it was bad, man. I mean, those first couple games and even like the first half of that Lions game, he just seemed understandably terrified of getting hit. I think everybody watching him was terrified of him potentially getting hit. With that said, man, he really did come back and start playing well. I mean, I felt like in the second half of that Lions game near comeback, he started to actually push the ball downfield a little bit, ripped off a nice winning streak, ultimately got Washington in the playoffs. So, Andrew, thoughts on Alex Smith, I guess, you know, retiring his entire career or anything you want to get off your chest?
So he was the fantasy quarterback 4 in 2017 when he was basically playing with the Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce offense that Mahomes inherited and then obviously blew up the league and threw for 50 plus touchdowns. So again, you know, Alex Smith, when he was surrounded by great talent around him, was able to elevate his game, you know, with when he was with Andy Reid. And look, people forget, but 2011, he led a team to a 13-3 record, San Francisco 49ers. He threw 17 touchdowns and under 3,200 yards, but still 13-3 record's pretty good. And if you look at his overall winning percentage as a starting quarterback with the 49ers, he was just above 500. And after the 49ers, he had a 66% winning percentage. So, no, was he not the... Obviously, Aaron Rodgers was the better quarterback pick in that draft. But
bold take, wait, Andrew. Bold take.
Bold take. But for the tough start that Alex Smith had, where it looked like, okay, he's bust, like this is never going to turn around, he did end up kind of turning around to actually have a pretty successful NFL career. Again, not a Hall of Fame career in any way, shape, or form, but I mean, I can't complain.
Yeah, man. And look, he was on those Harbaugh 49er teams that just never wanted to open up the game. When he was asked to try to, you know, throw the ball downfield and put up big numbers, I mean, he was PFF's basically most productive deep ball passer in 2017. you understand why the Chiefs moved on to Patrick Mahomes, but like he could have had even like a nice late career run in Washington if that awful injury hadn't have happened to him. So, you know, look, I'm a sucker for the off-script quarterbacks that, you know, can make the highlight of the day, but we don't give enough credit to guys like Alex Smith, the veteran quarterbacks that continuously get the offense lined up right. They get the ball in the hands of their playmakers. No, it's not as sexy as some of these other younger guys, but man, you know, you look at it, and for him to play since 2011, you know, consistently starting, never having over 8 interceptions in a season, you know, there is a case to be made for the ball control folks. Last points, and yeah, man, I mean, look, he did have some high-end moments. He wasn't just always a product of his environment. First playoff game back in 2012, wild game, 36-32 win over the Saints. Has a 28-yard touchdown run to take the lead with 2 minutes left. Jimmy Graham catches a 66-yard touchdown under 2 minutes. Alex Smith leads a 85-yard drive in 7 plays with, I believe they call it like the catch 3.0, because you had Dwight Clark's, and then you had Terrell Owens in that Packers game, and then Vernon Davis with the 14-yard game-winning strike with 14 seconds left. So to me, that was kind of Smith's just biggest, you know, kind of, I guess, greatest moment in the playoffs. Also had a 45-44 loss to Andrew Luck and the Colts, where Smith threw for 378 yards, 4 touchdowns. I don't think he really held him back in that game, Arrowhead faithful. And then finally, in his last game, last playoff loss, Marcus Mariota threw a freaking touchdown to himself. So yes, I realize Smith didn't always, you know, elevate his offense to the highest level it was capable of. But man, when the guy literally had that career since 2005, even before having, you know, just one of the better comeback player campaigns in recent memory and really in the history of the award, was a player who could be very proud of his NFL career. So hats off to Alex Smith in retirement.
Didn't he help? Was he the quarterback when Dwayne Bowe had that season with like 15 touchdowns?
Probably. And then the next season where like no single Chiefs receiver even scored a touchdown. So, you know, the tale to Alex Smith in that instance. Andrew, another retirement, last one on the docket for this episode. But Jordan Reed, man, you know, just another guy could not stay healthy throughout his career. Was kind of like the poster child of injury prone. You know, we always had to deal with fantasy drafts. Okay, do we want Jordan Reed? Because he's going to be a top three tight end as long as he's healthy. But unfortunately, you know, he played more than 13 games just once in his career. The one time he did play 14 games, I mean, 87 catches, 952 yards, 11 touchdowns for the 2015 Washington football team. Andrew, I mean, Jordan Reed, poster child of like what could have been at the tight end position, I think. It's disappointing. He still had a great career, but man, what could have been?
He was someone that I liked a lot. I think in my first Dynasty League ever, the Dynasty startup, I took him in the third round, hoping that he would be the difference maker for me. But unfortunately, it was basically after, I think it was going into the 2017 season. So he had got nicked up at the end of the previous year. It wasn't his 2015 year he was coming off of. But I was all in, and I thought I chased the upside. And it was like, if he stays healthy, but then the next 4 years, it was just more injuries and more injuries. It just kept piling on. So I honestly don't even remember even using him a lot. But hey, that's tight end, man. It's tough to be in the trenches.
Finishes with 48 receiving yards per game, 17th all-time, behind the likes of Jason Witten, Shannon Sharp, Jimmy Graham. Look, Jordan Reed's not going to be a Hall of Famer, but he really was playing like at that level for a brief amount of time. I understand getting that golden jacket, it means you need to play at that level for a longer period of time, so I'm not trying to make that argument. Just realize, you know, at his peak, Jordan Reed was in that, you know, tier one with Travis Kelce and Rob Gronkowski. Even in 2020, man, like Kittle gets hurt in week one, Jordan Reed comes in, everybody's favorite streamer, goes 7 catches, 50 yards, 2 touchdowns against the Jets. I understand he wasn't the same self. Next week, I believe he got hurt like as he was almost catching another touchdown. Like we almost saw like Jordan Reed really start to ball out in 2020, and he finally, I guess, had enough. So Jordan Reed, man, only 30 years old. That is wild to see. Hopefully many good days are ahead of him in life. Andrew, Washington football team, more news. They have waived Bryce Love, very popular, I guess, in this preseason. We were looking at Antonio Gibson. A lot of us thought, hey, Gibson, you know, this more severe wide receiver. I mean, he had, what, like 29 carries at Memphis? Like, it wasn't much. We did not expect Gibson to immediately get the early down role. He did. Bryce Love just couldn't stay healthy. So quite the fall from grace for the 2017 Heisman runner-up and Duke Walker winner. Man, he's 24 in July, so he could turn it around. But any thoughts on Bryce Love?
I think that, well, it sucks for my dynasty teams that have him on like as the last player. So I'm going to have to cut ties with him to make some room for some of these rookies. But I think it just kind of shows you that when these guys coming out of the draft that are coming off torn ACLs and just major knee injuries across the board, and they don't get draft capital attached to them, a lot of times they don't necessarily turn around again. It was Rodney Anderson, you know, 2 years ago, I think. And then there was the kid from Southern Carolina, Lattimore. He was another guy that, you know, had entered the league with a ton of injuries, despite the fact that he had a lot of production in college. It's just the injuries sometimes you can't overcome, and yeah, it sucks.
I mean, Adrian Peterson comes back from a torn ACL and rushes for 2,000 yards. Believe it or not, everybody, that's not the most common outcome when they have these injuries. Fingers crossed, man, because the first spot where my mind went was like, man, I hope Saquon Barkley is going to be okay moving forward. I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm confidently ranking him inside. I think he's my RB4, RB5. Like, I'm not worried about him per se. It was a very early season injury. We have no reason to believe the recovery isn't going along right. But, you know, some of those running backs you mentioned, man, certainly shouldn't be taken, you know, with a full head of confidence that that will come to fruition. Pittsburgh Post-Gazette believes the Steelers are, quote unquote, most likely to use their first round pick on a running back. We've kind of been thinking this. If it's not going to be the first round pick, it's going to be the second round pick. But you let James Conner go. You know, Tomlin has pretty much openly said he doesn't really view any of their running backs as a workhorse type, even though he is a workhorse head coach, whether it's Le'Veon Bell, D'Angelo Williams, James Conner for a year. I mean, really until the last 2 years, and even when Conner was healthy over the last 2 years, he was usually a featured guy. Before the last 2 years, Pittsburgh was like fantasy RB1 heaven, regardless of who was there. Andrew, we got Najee Harris, Travis Etienne, and Williams as our top three backs. Now, where would first of all, first question, would you rank any of these three backs like all that differently, you know, if they land on Pittsburgh? And then second question, where would you be ranking them?
No, I think that Pittsburgh's probably the best spot for any of the rookies because, like you said, Mike Tomlin's going to most likely give them a bell cow role, and that's kind of what they've just been missing. You know, when James Conner took over for Le'Veon Bell in that 2018 season, he was awesome in fantasy because he was the guy for 13 weeks until he got hurt at the end of the year, and he was a stud. He was like one of the best running backs you could get in all the years prior to that with Le'Veon Bell. I think that they're just trying to figure out that, yes, you know, some of these teams work better with committees, but if you have a running back on a cheap contract that's good and is significantly better than every other running back you have, again, same thing that's going on in LA with Cam Akers, it's going to happen, same exact scenario. It's like, hey, we were good with the bell cow. Let's go back to it instead of doing this committee thing that has made our offense significantly worse.
Preach.
So I think that, I wouldn't necessarily rank either of them too dramatically different, but in order, I think that Harris is the best one because I think that from a size standpoint, I mean, he fits the mold exactly. He weighs in basically the same size as Le'Veon Bell, 230, 6'1". He is the ultimate bell cow of these three big three running backs in this class. Again, Etienne and Williams are just a little bit smaller. I know Williams like weighed in at the same weight as Etienne, which really doesn't add up when you look at them, each of them play. You'd assume that Williams is actually heavier, but again, you know, we can take the pro day weigh-ins with a grain of salt depending on, you know, how much water this guy drank before or what have you. I'm going to say that Williams is probably the heavier back and probably plays with more weight, but Harris, I don't need a pro day way into necessarily tell me that the dude is a big man and is a bulldozer when he gets the ball in his hands. He can do everything. Like, yeah, does he have the explosive speed? Like, no, not necessarily. But he is versatile when it comes to a different type of scheme. I think that with Matt Canada taking over as offensive coordinator, you know, he did a lot of inside zone stuff at Maryland. So, again, I think that all those running backs can thrive in an inside zone scheme. So it's not like specific to Harris that's where he's particularly good. But across the board, I think that any of them would do really well. But I think that the pick is going to probably be Harris. And I think the reason the Steelers are probably trying to go in the first round is because they kind of did the math and they're like, all right, well, one of these guys might not be there when we pick at our second pick. So they might have to go in round one.
Okay, but where are you ranking him in the fantasy? Let's stick with Najee then. Najee Harris goes to Steelers. Where are you ranking him in the running back landscape? Right now, I know things could change. You know, if the Jaguars then draft ETN, like we're dropping James Robinson out. But things stand right now, and the only thing we know is Najee's on Pittsburgh. I'm looking at, I would probably settle on RB16. It feels too low. I would still lean towards taking guys like Antonio Gibson, DeAndre Swift, Chris Carson, Joe Mixon ahead of him. I'm not sticking to it necessarily because I do think, you know, that potential volume would be huge. But, man, like those other guys are pretty damn good too. He's certainly going to be at a minimum an upper end RB2.
Yes, I would probably put him around that 15 range. Yeah. Again, as good as he is and as good as the workload is going to be, again, we can't just overlook the fact that the Steelers don't have the best offensive line, and that matters. And, you know, how good is the offense going to be overall? Like, that's also a question mark. How good is Big Ben going to be? Again, the touches are going to definitely be there, which is great for him. I think that if he stays, you know, in the third round, kind of where Edwards-Helaire was last year before Damian Williams opted out of the season, I think that's fair price because that's usually where most running backs or rookie running backs get drafted. Yeah. You know, unless you were the Ezekiel Elliott or the Saquon Barkley's, and then last year Edwards Helaire's ADP probably got out of control in the top five. I don't think that's going to happen, especially because of the PTSD of CEH as a rookie. It's just going to stop anything from Harris from probably not getting into most people's top 10. So I think a third round is appropriate. If you draft AJ Brown with your second round pick, you drafted a running back with your first round pick, I think that Harris makes a lot of sense in the third round.
And I would just say, like, I understand they need to address the offensive line, but it's not in a situation where we need to fade the running back going to Pittsburgh because we're that worried about the offensive line. We will take all the volume that any of these guys would get in Pittsburgh over those offensive line concerns. Like, James Conner averaged 4.3 yards per carry last year. I know that's not the end-all, be-all stat for running backs, but it wasn't a situation where they just literally could never run the ball. They basically just never chose to because they kind of saw the guys they were looking at. So I don't think Najee Harris is going to single-handedly fix the Pittsburgh running game. Just realize they don't really need to do that to still enable a fantasy RB2 at worst. Andrew, huge news here as the president of his fan club. My guy, Cordarrelle Patterson, signed with the Falcons, and they even waived Ito Smith. So it was funny during the season. You know, Tariq Cohen goes down, and everybody was in my mentions going, oh, Ian, here you go, man. Time to hype up Cordarrelle Patterson and the waiver wire. And I was like, no, people, do not take this guy and start him. I love Cordarrelle Patterson. If you call him a bust, you do not know football. He is the best kick, not punt returner, just strictly kicks all time. You know, open up a book, check the stats. It's a fact. And he's also been good enough to function as anyone's idea of a legit RB2 wide receiver 4 throughout his career. So did he fulfill every expectation as a round one wide receiver? Not in that specific part of football, but as we know, Andrew, a lot more in the game of football that Cordarrelle thrives at. So any nice things to say about Cordarrelle, or you just want me to keep on going?
Well, I will say that the one thing Cordarrelle Patterson has that Russell Gage doesn't have is he's got that first round draft capital. You got to get all first round wide receivers out there for Matt Ryan. You got Ridley, you got Julio, you got Cordarrelle Patterson, you got Hayden Hurst, dude, all these former first round picks. Yeah, bro, how can the Falcons offense fail? But is he playing running back or receiver?
The Falcons announced him as a running back. I absolutely love it. Okay. I've been preaching this for years, and finally, the NFL is listening to me. But yeah, Andrew, look, I think Russell Gage is a system slot quarterback. We saw Mohamed Sanu dice up defenses for years through the air. Russell Gage comes in last year, finishes as PFF's number one graded passer. Let Cordarrelle Patterson throw the ball. He can already do everything else and see what happens. Last point here before I just, you know, fill up all your time with some CPAT talk. I did see Devin Hester getting a ton of Hall of Fame love, which, hey, I think he should go. He's the best pure kick and punt returner of all time, specifically punts as well. But, you know, the case that they were making for Hester, I just think Patterson, from a numbers perspective, is actually within the ballpark, I think, the people give him credit for. Offensive touchdowns at this point, Patterson has 18, Hester has 16. Hester has 14 punt return touchdowns. I get it. He's the GOAT there. CPAT, 8 kick return touchdowns. Hester had 5. They were both on the Hall of Fame all 2010 teams, both 4-time Pro Bowlers. Patterson actually has 1 more All-Pro, and Hester's had an extra 4 seasons to accumulate all these numbers so far. So can't wait to see what Patterson does at his next stop, and hopefully we get another Skycam touchdown or two on those kick returns. Moving on, Andrew, the Miami Herald reports many around the league anticipate the Falcons taking tight end Kyle Pitts. Where would you rank him in the tight end landscape with the Falcons? And I know you've been hoping he'd fall to the Dolphins there at 6, but would you still be cool with this spot?
So with the Miami Herald, number one is, I remember last year they were all about Justin Herbert getting drafted by the Dolphins. So that's one thing I will say about the Miami Herald.
Calling out the Miami
track
Herald
record of, because I remember I was like, Justin Herbert, you know, mock drafts, he's going to the Dolphins, I'm locking it in, and it was wrong, and it messed up my whole mock draft. And, you know, that wasn't one of the only picks I got wrong, but Miami Herald, just keep it in mind. But yeah, I did a lot of thinking with this, and I still like the Dolphins as probably one of my favorite spots for Kyle Pitts. I mean, same thing with the Bengals. I think that he just fell into so many targets with Cincinnati, but I think that they're ultimately going to go with either Chase or Penei Sewell. But as I thought more about the landing spot with the Atlanta Falcons, and yes, will he, the question marks about his target share in the offense with Julio there, with Calvin Ridley, it's not going to necessarily be as high. But when you look at it from a raw targets perspective, you know, the Falcons throw a ton. If they're drafting Kyle Pitts, it means they're not addressing the defense. So that's always good for more passing volume. And, you know, I just kind of looked it up because I was just interested. You know, play action. I think that Matt Ryan's going to use more play action this year. I think he's going to be more efficient with Arthur Smith. And Kyle Pitts, second highest graded player on play action throws last season because he's just the best at everything. You can look up any stat you want. Kyle Pitts is probably number one or number two. So, yeah, I'm probably going to be in on it, even though part of me saying, you know, you got to chase the targets, Andrew. But part of me is like, yeah, but he might catch 10 touchdowns. So, because we know Julio's not catching touchdowns. So,
yeah, the fact that Julio, even back to college, man, only has one 10 touchdown season, maddening. I did go check, you know, not to go too far down a rabbit hole, but I did check Julio's high school stats, and he did score a bunch of touchdowns back in the day. So it's not like a genetic thing with Julio, but since college and NFL began, that dude cannot find the end zone. So the only way I can really see Kyle Pitts busting, because I think this dude is really the only five-tool receiver in the entire draft. I mean, even, okay, like Jamar Chase and Devontae Smith and those guys, all fantastic, but if you just look at their height and weight percentiles at the position, they are all under like 50%. You know, Andrew, we were talking before the show, man, it's a Mickey Mouse class of wide receivers with kind of, you know, the way it's setting up. A lot of slot guys, a lot of inside guys, not as many beasts on the outside. And I think Kyle Pitts, man, we want to call him a tight end, but he is truly a number one receiver. I understand there are better spots for his projected targets, but at the same time, this is a Falcons team with a very bad defense. We know they're going to be chucking the rock around. I mean, Arthur Smith had Derrick Henry. Of course, he's going to feed him the ball. Their offensive coordinator, Dave Ragone, just had the Bears offense, and they've racked up the eighth most pass attempts. So I don't think there's really one way we should lean too heavily on, you know, in terms of Smith versus Dave and who's going to be making the big calls. But the big situation here that I love is that Hayden Hurst is like maybe the single worst blocking tight end in the league. At least PFF said he was last year. And he had some okay games, you know, as a receiver. But man, like, he won my Jameis Winston All-Star Award for tight ends for a reason, man. It was like 50 yards and or a touchdown in 10 games, but absolutely busted otherwise. Was never a consistent part of that offense, and I would have no doubts about Pitts screaming up in the top of that depth chart. Again, I don't see him busting, but if he is, man, it's going to be like Jason Garrett or one of these old school minded head coaches being like, well, he's just not quite good enough as an inline blocker right now. So if he goes to Falcons, man, I would comfortably put him as tight end six ahead of Dallas Goedert until the Ertz trade gets made, which, yeah. I'm still waiting on happening, but do you think tight end six is fair for Pitts on the Falcons?
Yeah, that's kind of the range I was thinking with Dallas Goedert, and it's funny that you mentioned Dallas Goedert. When we were looking over our pre-projections, I was like, why is Dallas Goedert so low? I was like, oh, wait, yeah, because Zach Ertz is still on the team, so we can't bump him up yet.
Yeah, hope those trade talks are going well, Philly. Come the hell on. Last note, assault allegations against Aaron Donald were dropped. Got released on Twitter. Pretty quick story. I was happy with how kind of quickly it got kind of turned over and we found the truth. But guy just beat up, eye all closed. And the rumors were that Aaron Donald had done this. Not so fast, my friends. Security footage confirmed that Donald actually was the one coming to the rescue and pulling people away, not the one beating this dude's freaking face in. So yeah, the guy that, you know, the victim came out and made a public apology. I sure wouldn't want to be on Aaron Donald's bad side either. But Andrew, it was a good reminder, man, because, you know, people were just kind of flooding the timeline with like pictures of Aaron Donald and stuff. Like, he is a different species, man. That dude would kill, I don't know, like anyone short of like a train. Like, I don't know, man. Put Aaron Donald in the UFC. Like, that would sell money, even if he doesn't know what he's doing. That dude is just scary as hell. I don't really have a big takeaway from this other than just remind people, like, if you see Aaron Donald anywhere, I don't care what you're doing, do not piss that man off.
I mean, if it's Aaron Donald versus a lion in a cage, I'm taking Aaron Donald.
Hey, man, I love that. Every now and then I'll throw the old video where he was practicing with like plastic knives and people thought they were legit real, like doing defensive line hand drills, knocking knives away. So I'm happy Aaron Donald does not have any issues with the law. He is truly a joy to watch play football. We're going to take a quick break to pay some bills. UFC at everybody. I love it. My second favorite sport. Masvidal and Usman put on a show the last time they stepped in the octagon. Well, that's not true. I mean, Usman just foot stomped him and controlled the ring the entire time, but certainly sold a lot of pay-per-views, and I'm still hyped anyway. Round two is sure to pack a punch. DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the UFC, is putting you in the center of this weekend's title fight with 26-1 odds on either title contender to reign victorious. Just bet $5 on either fighter to win, and if they walk out with the belt, you will cash $130. All right, guys, yeah, put that money on Kamaru Usman. Do not put it on Jorge Masvidal. If you don't know anything about fighting, you're about to watch Usman control this fight for the entire time, which he does every single fight. So don't worry if MMA isn't for you, DraftKings Sportsbook offers great odds, promotions on basketball, hockey, and so much more. But let MMA be for you, at least this week. And again, $5 on Usman to win, walk out with $130. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code PFF when you sign up to turn $5 into $130 if the title contender of your choice wins. Place your bet on Usman and watch the fist fly this weekend. That's code PFF to turn $5 into $130 if the fighter of your choosing takes home the crown. Limited time only. Only has DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older. New Jersey, West Virginia, Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problems? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Hell of a read by me, Andrew. Don't want to hurt myself patting my own back, but it is what it is. All right, moving on to the segment. Again, we did this last week. Basically, the idea, we did it at running backs, but we have these teams that we're pretty confident are going to be taking a wide receiver at some point. High, like whether it's first round, second round, third round, it's going to be some sort of a difference maker. So if this happens, basically, we're not going to worry about who the rookie could be coming in, but then how would we adjust to the veteran wide receivers that we're currently looking at in fantasy land? So I picked 10 teams that, again, could certainly use another wide receiver at some point early in the draft. Andrew, let's start things off with the Packers. How would you, you know, I think we're agreeing that Devontae Adams really wouldn't be moving at all, but, you know, what would them adding a higher end talent to the room change your opinion on in terms of MVS, Alan Lazard?
The Packers is real. I thought the Packers one was a joke, but all right. So Green Bay Packers, shout out to Jared Evans, big Packers fan. But I think that the way that we should look at the Packers receiving core, it really depends on the archetype receiver that they draft. So I think that if it's a slot guy that comes in there, I think that we need to address Alan Lazard maybe a little bit more, as he's really more the possession receiver that operates out of the slot. I think that if it's a speedster, a vertical threat, think that's someone that, okay, MVS, kind of looking for the overlapping roles, and the same thing with a red zone monster, a red zone threat, a big receiver, big bodied guy, you know, that could hurt Robert Tonyan because he absolutely lived in the end zone. I was blown away by the stat about Tonyan. He had zero broken tackles last year because basically he would just catch the ball and fall in the end zone, so he couldn't get tackled. So it was absolutely insane. I honestly couldn't believe it was a fact just based on how many catches he had, but I think it really depends on the archetype, and then we have to kind of adjust from there. I think that one of Tonyan, MVS, or Lazard is going to fall out of favor based on a rookie.
Yeah, and I hope it is a slot. And with that said, man, I wouldn't be overly high on the rookie. I know we've talked about the potential for someone to come into Green Bay and, you know, get the role we're hoping for, but I think MVS and Lazard are not only like good enough on the field, but also like in tight enough with Rodgers. Like, I don't see them drafting even a first round receiver and just immediately booting one of these guys to the bench. Obviously the rookie is going to play, but I mean, we can go back to 2018 when they drafted MVS, Equanimeous St. Brown, even Jamon Moore, and they drafted all these rookies because they needed receivers. And we just saw Devontae Adams get 169 targets as Aaron Rodgers force fed him every single game. So it just might be a little too crowded elsewhere for anyone other than Devontae to ball the hell out. I hope it's a slot. I think MVS, you know, his field stretching ability is fine. Let's try to spruce up the inside a little bit more, but I'm with you there. It's going to be one of those guys. Certainly not Devontae Adams. Same sentiment, I think, holds true with our next team, the Titans, where regardless of who they draft, man, I am not concerned about AJ Brown. They have 224 available targets. Shout out to John Daigle at RotoWorld for that info. That's the third most available targets in the league. So we can give AJB 94 of those targets, get him to 200, and then we still have over 100 left over for the next guy. I guess, Andrew, the issue with Tennessee, it could hurt Anthony Firkser. If you're into Josh Reynolds in the late rounds, that's not helping. But it's a maybe the prime destination in terms of like having a good quarterback and having an open opportunity to step into for a rookie wide receiver.
Well, I mean, how many targets is Derrick Henry going to get? I think
he's been working on the routes. He's showing off the Twitter vids. I love it. Take it to Twitter, Derrick. Go get your targets.
The thing with the Derrick Henry thing that just cracks me up is, guys, like, no one's saying he can't catch. Like, we know he can catch the ball. Like, it's just the coaching staff that has not been able to use him in the past. Like, that's the thing. A lot of these running backs are more than capital pace catchers, except for Jordan Howard. Like, he's like one of the main, and Ronald Jones, pretty much, are those two main guys that just for some reason were just born with these stone hands that I guess like their parents never played catch with them in the backyard or something. They're just like, nah, you're going to play. They're like, instead of like playing catch, they would just play handoffs in the backyard because they just couldn't catch the ball. But so anyway, yeah, I think that I agree with you. The Titans, I think, makes so much sense for a rookie landing spot. So many targets available. I think they also have the second most air yards available. So up for grabs. even with Reynolds and Firkser, so there, those guys are both going super late in drafts. They're still going to go late. I love the spot for any of these rookie wide receivers. And I think that this is a spot where we could potentially see a blow up, like a Justin Jefferson-esque type of ceiling from one of these wide receivers that lands there. Obviously, it depends on the talent that goes there. But, you know, a defense that's an offense that's led by an efficient quarterback sounds a lot like the Vikings last year. So,
yeah, like, I'm not convinced Josh Reynolds is going to command, you know, a ton of target share here. It could be a situation where we're projecting triple-digit targets for a rookie if they can leap to the top. But, yeah, man, Derrick Henry, just get that big dude in the open field, yes, man. He didn't drop a single pass last year. I mean, in the first, 4 years of his career, he only dropped a total of 8. So I know he doesn't have the best drop rate in the world, but it's not like he's, to your point, you know, he's not quite in the Jordan Howard sphere either. So, yeah, even if you're not going to line up Henry, you know, one on the outside, you know, at least two, you know, hell, can we get two, maybe even three dump offs, see what happens? I don't know, guys, just throwing ideas at a wall here. Next squad is like all available target air yard team, the Detroit Lions. I mean,
the air yard team.
Like, again, Titans, I'm saying that even though they want to be run first, I think the defense is bad enough, Tannehill's good enough that I think we could get, you know, a real efficient 110 targets. But, man, in terms of pure pass game opportunity, there might not be another squad better suited for a rookie to come into than the Lions. I don't know that I would care that much about, you know, their existing guys. I know TJ Hawkinson's, you know, kind of like the consensus tight end 4 right now. Rashad Perryman's getting a little love, but Andrew, there's just like so much availability there that, yeah, they can add a couple guys and it's fine. They need them.
Dude, I think that it makes so much sense for them to draft a slot receiver. They didn't fill the role of Danny Amendola. Like, that was one thing that it seemed like they were going to do, re-sign him. But they brought in Tyrell Williams. They brought in Rashad Perryman, who are both outside guys that are speed guys. And they don't have anyone to play in the slot. And like you mentioned before, this class has a ton of good slot wide receivers. So it seems like that's their plan, whether it's in the first round with Jaylen Waddle or in the second round with one of these other guys. I think that they're going to be going to the slot. And look, people hate Jared Goff because he's not good. And I don't necessarily disagree with that fact. But at the same time, he's also been able to support a lot of fantasy relevant wide receivers in his career. Again, he's not with Sean McVay anymore, but Jared Goff in garbage time, it's not like he's going to throw probably for 300 yards pretty often. Like, that defense is not good. So I will be all over whichever rookie ends up there. And if people are off of him because of Jared Goff, oh, he sucks, he's terrible, it's like, okay, well, Jared Goff's probably better than like Andy Dalton at this point, but we're going to draft Allen Robinson as a top, you know, 12 wide receiver. No one really cares. So yeah, I'm going to take over whatever rookie ends up with the Lions, and I'm going to be happy about it.
Put on a tombstone, Jared Goff, better than Andy Dalton. Jacksonville Jaguars, like, this is, man, I was tweeting today, like, please, don't draft a wide receiver, Urban Meyer. I'm begging you. We got DJ Chark on one side, Marvin Jones on the other, and the new Percy Harvin, the new Curtis Samuel, LaVisca Chenault, hopefully in this slot wide receiver hybrid role that Urban Meyer has mastered at the college level, haven't quite seen it in the NFL. So I can wish. We'll see. LaVisca did play more than double the amount of snaps out wide that he did in the slot last year. So we're taking a little bit of a, you know, jump there. But, man, for them to sign Marvin Jones, like, I didn't like that signing at all. I didn't really like any of the Jacksonville Jaguars moves this offseason. So I'm not, you know, overly bullish on what Meyer has come in and done really with this team. But, you know, if they don't add anybody, we're looking, again, bad defense, obvious quarterback upgrade in Trevor Lawrence. I mean, I think Chark and LaVisca Chenault, we're going to be probably bumping them up a good 5 spots if, they don't add anybody.
This is an ageist podcast, and I think that Marvin Jones is going to turn to dust next year.
He's on the list.
He's because the thing with him that I think we can't forget about last year was he started the season off absolutely terribly. Yeah. Like, he was unplayable at the beginning of last year, and he started to finally get it going, but there was really no one else for Matthew Stafford to throw the ball to. Everybody was either, Kenny Galladay was hurt, so Marvin Jones was inconsistent. Like, he had a couple blow-up games here and there, but overall inconsistent. He's not an elite separator. He wins with contested catches, which we know isn't really today's NFL. And look, he's there because of Daryl Bevel, not because of Urban Meyer. So, you know, there's always a chance that, you know, Meyer's like, look, like, we went through the Marvin Jones experiment for 4 weeks and get him out of there. Like, we need to get a rookie in. We need to get a plucky rookie into the game, get Marvin Jones out of there. So I think that Marvin Jones, I don't know if a lot of people are high on him or drafting him. He's an avoid player for me. I like Chenault a lot, like you had mentioned. I think that he can have a really dynamic role with the offense. Chark, I'm kind of like pretty lukewarm on. I don't really care necessarily either way, but it wouldn't surprise me if they draft someone and that he can kind of take over that number three spot.
I appreciate the Jaguars fans' devotion to Colin Johnson. Every time I tweet about any Jaguars player, they're like, hey, take a gander at Colin Johnson.
He's not bad.
No, he's not bad at all. He made the most of his opportunities, but I'm with you. Come on. Visca season. That's all I asked for. Philadelphia Eagles. Nobody on the Eagles had more than 80 targets last season. Absolutely ridiculous. DeSean Jackson's gone. Alshon Jeffery's gone. But they were hurt for most of last season. I mean, we had Jeffery kind of running routes on air there for a little bit. But we got Jalen Reagor, Travis Fulgham, and Greg Ward with Goddard. And for now, Zach Ertz as the group. Not great, man. To me, looking at the situation, like Jalen Reagor, I would certainly be less happy about trying to scoop him up if they add someone. But with that said, he's the wide receiver 50 right now. Like, if the Eagles draft Jamar Chase, I don't think Reagor is like going to move up. And then he's still, you know, kind of a value at that low point. So I think this offense is so cheap right now that, again, if they add a wide receiver to the group, I'm not really adjusting the ranks all that much because I don't want Fulgham or Ward anyway. And Reagor is going to be the number one or the number two. But it might actually do him some good to have someone like Chase opposite of him.
I agree. Reagor is definitely built more like a wide receiver two of an offense, vertical threat. You know, he's dynamic in space, but he's not necessarily a possession receiver. He's not an alpha wide receiver. So if they do end up draft, it seems like they might try to draft one of these bigger receivers, maybe like a Terrace Marshall type of player. Again, they may have some hesitancy about how the Arcega-Whiteside pick ended up happening. But I think that they're going to probably address the position again. They need to, but I don't think it necessarily deters you away from Dallas Goedert or Jalen Reagor because, look, there's probably going to be at least one or two legitimate pass catchers there. We like Jalen Hurts, so that's the thing. It's when the ADPs of certain players don't match is when you find value. So we love Jalen Hurts. Like, we're on Dallas Goedert. It's like, okay, well, Jalen Reagor is wide receiver 50. Like, that doesn't really add up unless people are just so afraid of them drafting someone.
Yeah, I was going through looking at some of the cheaper wide receiver ones right now with an ADP outside the top 40. Reagor's certainly in there. Brandon Cooks, Devontae Parker, depending on how you feel about that situation. Corey Davis, Jarvis Landry, if you think he might be the guy. Michael Pittman in that weird Colts offense. Henry Ruggs or John Brown, that's a mess. And then we got the Lions. So I get it. I'm not even saying these guys shouldn't be ranked where they are. You know, a lot of run-first situations, crowded passing games. But yeah, when you're looking at an offense with a quarterback we're expecting a lot from, and their wide receiver one is, you know, going as the 50th player off the board, not the worst guy to draft, much closer to his floor than his ceiling. We got the Bengals up next. So, Andrew, the way I look at this, I think everybody is in on T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd moving forward. And the fact they did what they did last year, Boyd with 110 targets, Higgins with 108. I mean, we can add Jamar Chase, and that's fine. But if we don't, all of a sudden, I'm looking at jumping these guys over, you know, Cooper Kupp, Robbie Anderson, Adam Thielen, those types, because if we can concentrate this offense down to two receivers, that's great news. I still think they can do three. I mean, Joe Burrow had the most dropbacks in the league before getting hurt. AJ Green's corpse and his 104 targets from last year are out of the picture. They can do three, but I just think that if they have three high-end receivers, they're going to be more in that lower-end wide receiver two borderline, kind of like the Steelers. But if we can eliminate one of them and just condense all that target share to Higgins and Boyd, look out, brother.
That would be absolutely insane if we get Tyler Boyd 20% plus target share, T. Higgins 20% plus target share, everything, especially in that offense, like you mentioned, like the most pass heavy team in a neutral game script last year. And I honestly don't even mind if they add Jamar Chase. I know you kind of hit on that because, look, he's going to be taking over this AJ Green role, which was basically the most inefficient role that any receiver could possibly have in the year of 2020. You know, 101st in yards per route run, and he was detrimental to the entire Bengals offense because he commanded the most high value targets and did absolutely nothing with them. He led the team in air yard share and end zone target share. So imagine you take all those awesome targets and you give them to good players. It's just the fantasy ceilings for these guys have the potential to be so much higher just because they're getting rid of a player that was just totally awful in their offense last year, especially the replacement with a guy like Chase. I've seen some things where some people are concerned that Chase is going to nuke the value of T. Higgins or Tyler Boyd, but I don't really see it that way. You know, every couple of years we seemingly get you know, teams that have three wide receivers, it's like, oh, you start them every week. Like, you start them every week. And I think that would be the case with the Bengals with their crappy defense and their pass-heavy mentality. I think that we're just going to see a duplication of the LSU offense. Tyler Boyd's Justin Jefferson. Chase is Chase. And you have T. Higgins being Terrace Marshall. Yeah. So if those guys all balled out together, maybe Joe Mixon can be good Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And you can't forget, Thaddeus Moss gets to be Thaddeus Moss.
Yeah, not hating on Higgins or Boyd if they draft someone, but if they don't, ooh boy, then we're putting rocket ship emojis all over in Twitter land. Yeah, I would just say, you know, because if any of you out there going, whoa, but what about AJ Green's, you know, only four of his 24 targets downfield were deemed catchable. It's a good point when, if you don't watch film, but this is why we got to try and mold it, people. Anybody that watched more than one Bengals game last year, even maybe just one Bengals game last year, you saw how dusty AJ Green was. And maybe that was coming off the injury. Maybe he'll be a new man with the Cardinals this year, but look, he was considered open or wide open on just one of those 24 targets. Like, there's a reason why every other Bengals receiver, even Andrew, you're like alter ego Alex Erickson, every other Bengals receiver was doing better than AJ Green last year. All right, so yeah, add in Jamar Chase, and I think we will see Joey Burrow's deep ball passing go up even without Chase. Give my guy Auden Tate some catches with the contested catches, and I'm sure he'll come through as he always does. Moving on to Texans, Andrew, it's a tricky situation, man, with the Deshaun Watson ongoing investigation. They were rumored to be in like the Alex Smith market if, you know, he wanted to play, but obviously he's retired. So it's looking more and more likely that Tyrod Taylor could be starting games in 2020. I understand he is not the quarterback we want throwing to our fantasy wide receivers, but my goodness, man, like, their defense is going to be awful. We're looking at probably the single worst team in football. Like, Tyrod's going to have to throw the ball, and Brandon Cooks is really the only guy there to throw to. So, again, I listed him before as one of the cheaper guys. Coming off the board right now is the wide receiver 40. Andrew, if they don't add anyone, if they do add someone, I think we're just completely done with everyone on this offense because now it's starting to get crowded and it's already bad. If they don't add someone, though, Brandon Cooks is probably someone we're going to have to start to get more behind.
Cooks is a value. And my guy, we just mentioned him, Alex Erickson, dude. He's on the Houston Texans. You never know.
Oh, my God.
You never know. But it's really hard to try to decide outside of Cooks. Again, he can't – I mean, he's going to have, like, 300 targets next year? Like, maybe. I guess, you know, Moncrief, Randall Cobb, Chris Conley, Kiki Coody, Andre Roberts. I like Jordan Akins a lot, too, as a tight end. But then they traded for another tight end, Ryan Izzo, and it's just a mess. It's just so hard to try to figure out. Again, this will be something that'll be interesting to see in preseason, how they, you know, who the starters are. But again, at the same time, it's like, what's the point, man? Like, just draft Cooks and move on.
I think you might have just talked me out of Cooks, too. Why did they add Moncrief, Conley, and Erickson, and Roberts in the same? Like, I knew all the moves were ridiculous. I didn't quite realize that they focused on wide receiver that much.
You're just like, wait. Is this a team that I just picked up off the waiver wire?
That's what I'm like. I shook my head collectively at all those signings, but then didn't quite put together that, no, they were all to the Texans and also all in the freaking wide receiver room. So you know what, people? Yeah, I mean, even if they don't add someone, like, I would not blame you for not, you know, wasting your time with Brandon Cooks either. But we shall see. Brandon Cooks, man, you know, the anti, kind of like Andre Johnson, Allen Robinson of his generation, Tom Brady, the good version of Jared Goff, Drew Brees, obviously Deshaun Watson last year. We will see what Brandon Cooks looks like with a below average quarterback
really
in 2021.
What's he really made up?
Stay healthy though, Brandon. Hopefully keep your head on straight. Next up with the Ravens. So, man, like, Hollywood Brown balled out at the end of last year, and people probably didn't realize it because you were already too pissed about the first half of the season and didn't start him. But truly, man, he scored a touchdown or went over at least 80 yards in each of his final eight games. They added Sammy Watkins. I don't think that's too big of a hurdle. He's just going to kind of line up where Dez Bryant was. If they add someone else, though, Andrew, do you want anybody in this passing game?
Mark Andrews is kind of a guy I like just because it's tight end, and I think that he's a good player. But Marquise Brown is someone that I've been trying to advocate to get away from. Again, I've only drafted him in best ball drafts when I've had Lamar Jackson at quarterback just because I'm trying to get the stack. But again, you mentioned the stats in the later half of the season, you know, wide receiver two numbers, 32% target share after week 11, but that's it. Like, he's at best a wide receiver two. He's been a fringy wide receiver three, wide receiver four the past two seasons when he's basically been the pseudo number one wide receiver. Again, not necessarily number one target with Mark Andrews there as well, but I can't get behind Marquise Brown, really. There's nothing he's showed me in these past two seasons that he's the guy that they're going to build the offense around him. You know, our PFF account is tweeting out, get Lamar Jackson a wide receiver one. So, I mean, that's kind of the consensus on the Ravens right now, is that they need to address the position. They need to add more guys, and that's going to take away from Brown. Yes, is he going to have his splash weeks? Sure, but there's a ton of wide receivers that can do that. I don't see anything about him that really stands out that makes it me, I need to get Marquise Brown in this draft versus, you know, this other player who maybe is going a little bit later. Again, he's got more of a name cachet to him, you know, former first round pick, but I think I'm really kind of out on Marquise Brown.
Mark Andrews led the 2019 Ravens with 98 targets. Hollywood led the 2020 Ravens with 100 targets. Now we're adding walk-ins. If we had someone else, like, it's just an offense that where the target leader could have like 75, 80 targets. Just not good in fantasy land. It's already a struggle enough as it is. So yeah, Baltimore passing game. Shocking hot take. Not one you should be looking to target too actively. Two more here, everybody. We got the Chicago Bears. So we know A-Rob's are locked in wide receiver one. I think Darnell Mooney is a fantastic field stretcher, wide receiver two. He can be your wide receiver three. That's fine. There's been a lot of Anthony Miller trade talks. He's so out of good graces with this organization right now after getting kicked out of the playoff game. Highly, highly unlikely that Anthony Miller comes back. Even if he does, I don't think he'd be getting guaranteed anything resembling a starting role. So, Andrew, I guess the Bears, even though this isn't a passing game we should be looking to get into, but in a draft filled with slot receivers, man, we could be talking about one of them starting week one in this offense.
I agree, and I think that brings up the question about Darnell Mooney, and let's say that they do draft a rookie receiver in the second round, a slot wide receiver. Is it crazy to think that that player could potentially unseat Darnell Mooney, who was a fifth-round pick, you know, not super established, the Bears don't have a lot invested in him, and they're bound to basically screw up the situation regardless. So I think, like, having Darnell Mooney as like a dynasty asset, I think that he's an interesting player to potentially look to sell high on based on the fact that, you know, he broke out really early on last year, got a lot of targets, but he wasn't super efficient with the targets. Again, that's a lot of that to do with the quarterback play being pretty piss poor with Mitchell Trubisky and Nick Foles. But I can't like not look at him and get Darius Slayton vibes where it's like, yeah, he's good, but like the team is never going to be satisfied with this particular player, and they're just going to be looking to move on. It's like, what's the mindset around him going to be when they do draft a player with higher draft capital about Darnell Mooney? So I think just an interesting way to look at it.
Yeah, I don't think he's really prioritizing anyone on this offense, including, honestly, Allen Robinson. He's now the wide receiver 13, so he's not being priced as that clear-cut wide receiver one he's been. So I'm okay with Dalton getting caked into it. But yeah, I would just say, people, like, don't be completely convinced that Robinson is just going to continue to keep on keeping on with another, you know, not good quarterback under center. We did see it out of him, you know, earlier in his career. He had the one good year of Blake Bortles, and the next year, 16 games, 151 targets. He had 880 yards and 6 touchdowns. So credit to him for making the most out of Trubisky and stuff. But who's to say that Dalton won't bring out another bad version of him? I mean, even DeAndre Hopkins, you know, he's overcome a lot of bad quarterbacks. Couldn't do so with Brock Osweiler. He had played a 16 game season, only scored 4 touchdowns. So, you know, it's just one of these things we played the game a couple weeks ago, Andrew. We're like, what situations are we kind of over assuming everything's going to be fine? Allen Robinson with a new quarterback who is not particularly what we would call good is one of these situations that I think people are glossing over a little bit too much. Last team, the New Orleans Saints. We know Michael Thomas is locked in as a wide receiver one. I guess Tre'Quan Smith could be the one getting screwed, because Andrew, I mean, this offense, you know, brought up the point when I was kind of looking at some of the cheaper stacks in fantasy land. You know, it's been fun in best ball if you get Alvin Kamara or Michael Thomas early to kind of just fill in the pieces in the later rounds. But if they add another high-end wide receiver piece, could complicate things a little bit.
I think Michael Thomas is probably my favorite wide receiver to draft outside of AJ Brown, because they're just in very similar situations. I mean, no one would be surprised if Michael Thomas finishes as the wide receiver one overall. The same thing with an AJ Brown player, but neither of them are going in the first round. But you can get that type of upside second round or even in the third round, where I've been able to draft Michael Thomas. The situation is so similar to the Tennessee Titans. Again, you have so many targets available. You know, Jared Cook is gone. Emmanuel Sanders is gone. It's not being highlighted nearly as much because Michael Thomas is obviously, he had a really disappointing season last year. But look, if a talented rookie comes in there and it's Tre'Quan Smith, Marquez Callaway, Deontay Harris standing in his way, and it tells us one or two things about the rookie. It's like, A, okay, this rookie sucks because he can't beat out these guys. Or number two, this is going to be a rookie that's going to see a lot of action in year one because his path to opportunity is really clear. Look, Tre'Quan Smith, guys, it's not going to happen. Like, he had so many opportunities. He's had opportunities the last 4 years to break out and be that guy. Even last year when Michael Thomas went down, I mean, that kind of was the kind of the selling point for me. Yeah. So look, he had a perfect opportunity to kind of take over and be a staple in that offense, and he wasn't able to do it. So I think that the Saints are a smash spot. Them and the Titans are probably my two favorite spots for any of these rookie wide receivers.
Love the call on Michael Thomas being one of those just top 12 wide receivers that you should actively be trying to chase. The fact that, again, you know, I've ranted about this before, but the whole slant boy thing being used against Michael Thomas instead of just the, you know, one after another, just inept or noodle arm quarterbacks he's been forced to play with over the past few years has been, you know, infuriating. He's caught 33 of 36 catchable targets thrown at least 20 yards downfield since he entered the league. That's the fourth highest mark among 64 qualified guys. Michael Thomas can catch balls downfield, people. Teddy Bridgewater, Taysom Hill, and freaking old man Drew Brees were the problem, okay? And it wasn't even that big of a problem. The guy set the freaking reception record 2 years ago and then played through the pain this year when he got hurt, you know, in freaking week one. So one of those things where I think Michael Thomas is going to prove a lot of people wrong this year. I know he doesn't do himself many favors with some of his, you know, Twitter stalking. It's Kevin Durant-esque at times. But, you know, just don't let that get in the way of realizing Michael Thomas is anyone's idea of a wide receiver. One, quickly, everyone, if you like fantasy football and if you like playing fantasy for money, you need to check out Underdog Fantasy. Underdog's got everything, including season-long and playoff best ball. Best ball is a season-long game where you draft a team like you normally do, but that's it. There's no in-season roster management. Underdog automatically selects your best performers each week, saving you loads of time. Go to Underdog Fantasy and deposit $10 using promo code PFF and get a free PFF Edge annual subscription. That's promo code PFF. Draft now at Underdog Fantasy. Last segment, everybody, before we get out of here, want to go over some potential exceptions to the early round players rule in fantasy drafting. So mentioned this at the beginning of the podcast, but please check out PFF.com. Have an article going up about draft capital and the impact on rookies. And look, people, since 2010, we've had 7 quarterbacks finish as a rookie top 12 producer at their position. We have had 30 running backs, 16 wide receivers, and only 2 tight ends, Evan Ingram, Rob Gronkowski. In every single case, over 80% of those top performers, and running back and wide receiver are top 24, actually not top 12, so expanded that. But in every single case, 80% or more of those players were drafted inside of the top three rounds. That doesn't mean we don't see 4th and 5th and 6th and undrafted guys make an impact, but for it to be prolonged enough over a season to get these results in your first year in the league, it's been very difficult historically. So Andrew and I are going to focus on 2 players each that we don't think are really going to be going in the first 3 rounds, but if the stars align, if the opportunity is afforded to them, we think they could put up some numbers. So Andrew, who's your first early round exception?
Okay, so one of my favorite rookies in this class, running back Khalil Herbert from Virginia Tech. He's projected in the PFF draft guide to go in the 4th round, and it lines up with Grinding the Mocks, which is a tool I use that kind of collects aggregate mock drafts, and he's basically a mid-round 4 player there. So again, ideally we want to see if they're going in day 3, ideally they want to be going in the 4th round. You know, 7th round is obviously not ideal for these guys, but with Khalil Herbert, what I really like about him is he makes yards after the contact. Among the 2021 draft class, he finished 2nd in total yards after contact behind only Najee Harris. Ooh. Nightmare to defend with the ball in his hands, and he also has versatility as a kick returner. He led the ACC in all-purpose yards in 2020. So he's a top 5 running back for me. His nickname is Juice. Like, I don't see what's not to like about the guy. He's got great contact balance, great vision. I like him a lot. Again, his negatives, I gotta hit on them. He's really old, so that's one thing. I know it's an ageist podcast, but he's a rookie, 24 years old. Running backs, I'm not as concerned about it because, look, I want the rookie on his rookie contract. Get in, get out. All right, 4 years. See you later, Khalil Herbert. Whatever. Don't care. And then the other thing is his lack of pass game usage. But again, we've hit on this before. It really just depends on what offense he's in. If he goes to an offense where they throw the ball running backs, then he'll probably catch passes. And that's the thing with a lot of the college game is a lot of the college game doesn't feature running backs in the passing game unless you play under Mike Leach in the air raid offense. Like, that's the one. If you look at all of the RB target leaders in college, it's all guys from teams that played under Mike Leach, Washington State. It's crazy. And then last year it was Texas A&M. So it's absolutely insane that the way that they use the running backs in college in the passing game. So for me, I think Khalil Herbert, he's not like a consensus number five guy. I'm a little bit higher on him. I know that PFF has him as their number five running back, and I'm excited about him. So Juice, don't let me down.
I had an article up a few weeks ago. I looked at the kind of receiving ability of all the incoming rookie RBs. And for Herbert, okay, he's never caught more than 10 passes in a season, but he only dropped two of his 54 targets. It wasn't like he couldn't catch the ball. He couldn't do things in a receiving game. He just wasn't asked to. So my conclusion was that there's not enough evidence to paint him as a good or bad receiver. At least we know the man can make plays with the ball in his hands. So Khalil Herbert, fingers crossed, ends up on the Jets, Steelers, or Falcons. Another player I'm hoping to wind up in a cushy situation. My guy, Ohio State's finest, Trey Sermon, of course, also played for the Oklahoma Sooners. I mean, give me a running back that stood out equally at Oklahoma, at Ohio State, two of the better programs. And you know what? My guy over at Underdog Fantasy, we were reading off the promo before, but Hayden Winks over there, and he has Sermon as his RB4, and I am in on this too. Like Herbert, we didn't see Sermon, command a ton of receiving work, but when has Ohio State really made a habit of throwing to their running backs? You can say Curtis Samuel, but come on, he was a legit hybrid there. Not what Trey Sermon is. He is a 6 foot, 215-pound workhorse potential, 4.5, 40-yard dash, and man, he's not Alvin Kamara. He is certainly not, but he's got arm length that does resemble him, and he's got the swaggy turf tape to boot. I mean, look, dude, 10 carries, 112 yards in a tutty against Michigan State, 331 yards and two touchdowns versus Northwestern, 193 yards, another one versus Clemson with plenty of receiving work, and he did it impressively. These weren't big holes he's just taking advantage of, man. One broken tackle after another, so high-level competition. We saw him able to work on all three downs, and he just has that, elusiveness, that thing that you watch on film with running backs, and you say, that guy, I know, even if you say running backs don't matter, you look at the one breaking all the freaking tackles, and you say, that guy is better than the other one. So again, I think I was surprised to see how kind of quick he was, 75th percentile numbers in the three cone, broad and vertical alike. Andrew, Trey Sermon, man, I think he could rise up a potentially iffy situation if given the opportunity.
Trey Sermon is PFF's, he owns PFF's fourth highest career rushing grade in the class, 94.9, behind only Etienne Harris and Javonte Williams. So I think that he makes a lot of sense there at the RB4. I think I have him at RB6, and I've gone back and forth between him and Herbert. So maybe we'll have to make a friendly wager, Ian.
There we go. And yeah, I mean, look, but Herbert, he's 5'9", 212. Same thing with some of these wide receivers, man. I'll crunch some numbers, and you see, the guys popping out is all explosive. And you look at them, they're like 5'8", 170. So it's just one of these things. Sermon and Herbert, we like to use the phrase theoretical three-down running back. If a team were to let them have, the James Robinson 2020 role, what could they do with it? Even though that role is incredibly rare for rookies to get, I do think Sermon and Herbert could make good use of it. Andrew, do you have a wide receiver that you're interested in potentially outperforming expectations?
Yeah, so my receiver, again, also projected to go in the fourth round, same on grindingthemocks.com. It's going to be Auburn's Seth Williams, and I've gone back and forth about Seth Williams. I almost wrote him up as a fade player when I did my fade list for pre-draft players. Ultimately, I settled on him as a sleeper because I felt that he had enough on his profile that I actually liked him enough. So he's an early declare number one, which is something that we look for a lot in wide receivers. We want high-end age-adjusted production. Last year, he ranked number one in team air yard share, number three in team end zone target share, and he owns a top 10 career dominator rating in the class. And the best part about it has to be that he played with Bo Nix from Auburn, who is absolutely terrible. Only 63% of Williams' targets last year were deemed catchable, or actually the past two seasons, which is the fifth worst rate in the class among all receivers with at least 100 targets. So in spite of Mr. Bo Nix throwing him air balls all day long, he was able to post up pretty impressive stats. He also broke out at age 19 when playing alongside Darius Slayton, who actually ended up going into the NFL and having a significant role, played alongside Anthony Schwartz as well, who's also going to be drafted in this class. The guy is a speedster. So, and the thing that I kind of came away with all the research on Seth Williams was he reminded me a lot of Gabriel Davis. Gabriel Davis commanded a ton of air yards, a ton of end zone targets at UCF, had a solid first year at the Buffalo Bills, went in the fourth round. So it is a bigger receiver. Now, the one thing that I'm hesitant about Seth Williams, and this is kind of my bugaboo on a lot of these big-bodied receivers, is just the lack of separation. Like, can they, like, get open? Because I'm having nightmares of N'Keal Harry not being able to get open against Arcega Whiteside, like I mentioned before. That's one of the issues I have with him, and that's obviously why he's going to go later in the draft, because he's not an elite separator. But a lot of the other production things look really well, so I guess I'll stamp my flag on Seth Williams for now. But I'm definitely lukewarm on the take, because again, the separation thing is just so key. And if he can't do that, then it's like he's just going to be another big body receiver that can't get open.
If we're going to bet on him, though, you know, developing that separation, I do think if we're going to bet on any prospect developing it, though, I think we should do someone at, you know, a highly touted school like Auburn that maybe doesn't have the best passing game. And, you know, I know Williams isn't the most twitchy guy in the world, but still, man, I mean, 70th percentile vertical, broad jump, shuttle and three cone, not quite so much. So we'll see how that works out. But I came from a similar avenue as you, so I think I am more correct, but I think you're on the right planet. I'm going with N'Keal Collins, who our guy Jared Evans, PFF's mastermind behind our fantasy social media, he's been hyping him up for months, and I'm happy to hop on the bandwagon. So I don't know how many times this podcast I've said I've had an article go up, but excuse me for that. I was looking at five tool receivers: speed, size, hands, route running ability, and playmaking ability. Kyle Pitts was the only one that really cracked each. You know, Chase, Devontae, Waddle, Bateman, and more just had issues with the weight and speed. And man, N'Keal was popping as someone that I was surprised to see kind of wind up in the finalists. Man, he checks every size and speed box you could ask for. 6'4", 215. He's got the 4'4", 240. He has longer arms than Auden Tate, man. So, and then you look at it, you know, 79th percentile and three cone with some similar jumping numbers as Seth Williams. I think N'Keal Collins might already be really good and was just underused in a Michigan offense that we've seen hold players back like Donovan Peoples-Jones over the years. So, you know, even if Donovan Peoples-Jones isn't anything more than a solid number three, number four receiver in the NFL, I mean, you know, Michigan's still a program that's recruiting top caliber athletes. I just don't think they've done a great job at, you know, getting them ready to go in the NFL. I think N'Keal could be an exception to that rule. We got to see where he goes. But, I mean, man, maybe I'm still a little biased to these, you know, big body, you know, Dez Bryant types, you know, that were just really dominant 10 years ago. But remember, with these guys, you know, with your AJ Browns of the world, like, even if you're viewed as someone that, you know, isn't this route, you know, pristine route runner just yet, if you're just a beast enough and big enough athletically to make it not matter, man, I'm not saying that'll work, you know, for 10 plus years, but hey, it might be good enough for a guy in their early 20s to keep going. So N'Keal Collins, shout out Jared Evans again. I'm confident this is our guy. Let's get it.
One of these big body receivers has got to hit. Like,
one of them, man. Come on.
There's going to be one of them that hits, because, like you mentioned, there's too many small receivers in this class where a team's not going to put one of these bigger receivers in a starting role, potentially as a number two or a number three, and even if they also move them into the slot as, like, a big slot receiver. So, again, one of these guys is probably going to hit, and it's funny that you picked N'Keal Collins, because that was him and Seth Williams are, like, ranked next to each other. I was like, all right, I need to, like, pick one of these big bodies to stamp my flag on. So I was like, all right, I guess I'll go with Seth Williams instead of N'Keal Collins. So I guess it's going to be me versus you and Jared. N'Keal Collins versus Seth Williams. Let's go.
N'Keal Collins, Seth Williams, and Trey Sermon versus Khalil Herbert. Love to see it, everybody. Encourage all of you to check out our PFF draft show on PFF.com, kicking off at 7 p.m. on Thursday night, April 29th. We're also going to have shows on Friday, covering rounds 2 and 3, starting at 6 p.m. Saturday, rounds 4 through 7, starting at 11 a.m. And, of course, a recap on Sunday at noon. So we'll be covering every round with live reactions and analysis from Chris Collinsworth, PFF's team on draft analysis, or analyst, excuse me, and guest appearances. I will also be there giving my take on the fantasy relevant players as they come in. Promo code DRAFT30 for 30% off, people. 30% any PFF subscription. If you play your cards right, you might just be able to get the draft guide for this draft. And hey, we got another one coming out soon for next draft. Get pretty much 365-day coverage from the fine folks at PFF. That's going to wrap up this episode of the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. Andrew, good stuff as always. Let the people know what you got in the docket.
Yeah, so first of all, yes, get the draft guide. Use the promo code. It's $28 with the promo code. That's less than 2 burrito bowls delivered by DoorDash. I did the math. Do it. Get the draft guide. But coming up this week, I got only one more piece coming out, and I'm looking at trends from all the NFL GMs. I remember when I was looking at the Jaguars, I found it really interesting that Trent Baalke had drafted running backs on all of his past teams. So I want to look a little bit more in depth at some of these teams, especially with newer GMs, just see kind of where they stem from, see if we can pick up, get any indications about where they may be leaning towards in the draft earlier or later on. So yeah, that's all.
Interesting stuff, man. So you always do DoorDash for Chipotle. You don't go pick it up?
No, man. I'm grinding the tape, man. I don't got time.
Bro, I actually don't mind. Hot take here. I don't mind lines like for Chipotle and stuff like that. It's a nice, it's like, all right, there's nothing I can do to move up. We have kind of a hectic day. Usually here's my chance to chill. You know, traffic pisses me off because like there's bad drivers, but just standing in line. But no, my local Chipotle, they're doing like mobile order only now. So I'm like, I don't want this, man. I think Chipotle tastes 10 times better when you can get it there yourself and eat in the store. So that's my gripe. And if any Chipotle's listen to the podcast, want to help make the one in Columbus, Ohio off of 5th, you know, accept my walk-in orders again, it'd be much appreciated. But enough of that. Thank you, Andrew, for the time as always, brother, at @AndrewErickson_. Find me on Twitter @IHeartIts. And thank you guys as always for supporting the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. Until next time, take care, everybody.